I greet all the honorable members on the platform. I see Honorable Kruger. Long time no see, my friend from the north, Kuchaneda.
Dankie, Chairperson. Yes, thank you. And it's a privilege to be on this meeting again. Hopefully my health and my wife's health are history now, and we can go forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Your thoughts and prayers, we acknowledge your apologies, and I'm pleased that you're back in the fold, and welcome again, and glad to have you back.
Thank you.
Let's just check. Welcome, Honorable Muller. Trust you well, and you're getting into the thick of things.
Yes, I am. Thank you for holding everybody.
Greetings. I'm just checking what other members are on the platform already. Nomta, are you chasing up members?
Yes, I am, Mr. Jacobs.
Thank you. We greet everybody else who's on the platform, especially our officials, and also members of the public. I know we're going to stream live, so we don't want to delay things too much, but we need a quorum, so I'll just give it a few minutes. Welcome, Mr. Murray. Trust you well.
Thanks very much, Chair. Yes, very well. Thank you. The exhausting week last week, but went very well. And thanks for your participation. Thanks.
Yeah, I know you guys did really well at the convention center. It was a big, big success, and well done again.
Thanks very much. I'll pass that on to the minister.
Thank you. I acknowledge the CE, Mr. Molosi, welcome.
Good morning, Chair, and to the members. Thank you, and looking forward to the engagement.
Thank you. Thank you. Is there any other? I greet all of the other members, but I want to check if there's any other. Oh, there, Honorable April, welcome. We haven't started yet. We're just waiting for a quorum. How are you keeping?
Chairperson, I see our load shedding schedule start at 11 o'clock, and sometimes then we have a connection problem. So if I disappear after 11, please accept my apology.
Honorable Kruger, noted, but we'll pick it up in the when we open the meeting formally in the apologies. I'm keen to start, so let me just check how many members do we have. Honorable Mayeni, welcome. Is the whip in?
How are you, Faiz?
Good, 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 Honorable Mayeni. Your side?
I'm fine. I'm
good,
fine
good,
also.
good, good, good.
How is the rain in Cape Town?
I'm looking outside. I don't see any rain. It's a beautiful day in Cape Town. I don't see wind. I just see sun. So we're still having some of the side. How about you in the KZN?
Hi, today I think it's going to rain today.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
But your rain is a hot rain, eh? It's a very humid rain.
Yeah.
You guys are quite busy there in the KZN. Yeah, I saw you had by-elections last week, and the president also visited you last week. So you guys are quite busy.
Yeah.
No, good.
Sure.
How much members do we need to have a quorum, Mr. Kunene?
It's six, Mr. Jacobs. I think it's, yeah. Mr. Milan has just joined. If we've got six, then we can start.
Okay.
I'm just checking, Mr. Milan. I've just admitted here. Yeah.
Okay. Good morning, everybody, and greetings, all the honorable members and our guests. I think I will start by opening the meeting and welcoming everybody to this, the Portfolio Committee of Small Business. We also say warm welcome to the people on the platform. Our apologies for starting 9 minutes late. It's not our culture. We would like to start things on time. So we will improve on our tardiness and hopefully also encourage members to log in at least 5 minutes before the time so we can start on time. Okay, opening is done. Welcoming is here. With the purpose of the meeting is we have two issues that we want to deal with today. It is getting a progress report on the oversight visit of Northwest and also our first commentary on the legacy report, and then obviously at the adoption of the minutes. So with that, I welcome each and every member here. Feel free. We're going to engage with two presentations, and we, as usual, want maximum participation. I will now invite Mr. Kunene to take us through roll call and apologies.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members who are on the platform. Good morning, colleagues. Good morning, CFO of CIFA and the officials from the department. Chairperson, in the platform, we've got you. We've got Honorable Kruger. We've got Honorable Mola, Honorable Mieni, Honorable April, and Honorable Tromelang. Those are the members that are in the platform so far. And then I do have apology from Honorable Zungula. And then I also have an apology from Honorable De Villiers, who indicated that he will be able to join at 10. So those are the members and the apologies that I have received. Then I also, from the department, I've got an apology of the minister who's attending the cabinet, and also the standing apology so far of the deputy minister. I think I did talk to the apology of Honorable Sungula. So those are the apologies that the members who are in the platform. Also, I think lastly, Honorable Kroker indicated that he might have a load shedding, I think at 10 or 11. Then he requested to be excused should the load shedding start or if he's not able to continue the meeting. So those are the apologies that we have, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Kunene. And with those apologies, we note the roll call and the apologies. I think from my side, I want to immediately go into the first presentation, which is briefing on progress made with regard to the resolution of the committee emanating from the oversight report. I want to invite the minister's advisor. I'm not sure if the DG is here, the chairperson of CIFA, and then if not, also I assume the CE will make the presentation. But let me start with the ministry. Mr. Murray, is there any opening remarks, and you can lead the team in the absence of the DG? Okay, if Mr. Murray is not in or available, I think then I'll hand over straight to you, CE. The platform is yours.
Thank you, sir. Good morning to the honorable members and colleagues from the department. Raking, if you are able to grant me the permission, not in use my name, to connect to rather to share the presentation. Not yet granted. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I'm just trying to, yes. There we go. And now I must move. Just trying to move, Chair. Just bear with me the. Something on my screen that I'm trying to get rid of. Thank you. Thank you, members. Once again, we were requested by the committee chair to come and brief and update the committee on the progress made by the institution with regards to the findings and subsequent recommendations of the portfolio committee during the oversight visit to the Northwest Province, where a couple of our clients were visited by the portfolio committee, and there were some issues that were picked up. And I must also remind the committee that around September last year, we did come to the committee to provide an update on the findings and the recommendations on how far the board and the institution progressed with regards to addressing those issues. And today we're focusing mainly on the issues around one of our intermediaries who actually fraudulently made loans actually to clients that were non-existent, that is their clients, and also the issue of participants on the Spaza Shop Support Program, who at the time had not received the top up that was given to them. My screen is a tendency of freezing, yes, sir. Just bear with me when I try and find a way to. There we go. Thank you, Chair. The first item on the agenda will be the Spaza Shop Support Program, followed by the intermediary that I referred to called IntelliMed Financial Services, in short, IFS, and also just to touch on some of the interventions that we've actually put in place as part of the lessons learned since that visit. Starting, Chair and members, with the Spaza Shop Support Program. During 2021, the Spaza Shop Program was launched at CIFA to provide applicants with a grant of 3,500 rand, which was later increased and approved by the Department of Small Business Development to be topped up in 2022 by another 7,000. To make the total, therefore, 10,500 per applicant. Some applicants had already accessed things happening here. What's happening?
You sound temporary, but you're back on. Please proceed.
Hello, am I audible, sir?
Yes, we can hear you now, and we can see the presentation, so continue.
Okay, I'm worried about this. Then, Chair, the applicants, some of the applicants who received the 3,500 rands originally needed to be traced and be alerted that there is an additional 7,000 that they actually qualify for. Consequently, 5,540 applicants had to be traced and offered the top up of 7,000 rands. With regards to the clients who were actually picked up in the Northwest through the portfolio committee oversight visit, all clients in the Northwest who were selected for the visit received the 3,500. That was between 2020 and 2021. The additional top-up for applicants, that is the 7,000, which commenced with the disbursements in 2022, was received by some while some were not even aware of the additional grant. The applicants were, the applicants were then subsequently informed and have since utilized the money. All the Northwest beneficiaries that were selected during the visit have received their 7,000 top-up grant amount, and this was confirmed by our disbursing partner bank, i.e. NetBank, with statements to that effect. And from the national point of view, during that visit, nationally, there were 1,124 spaza shops beneficiaries who had not yet received the 7,000 rand top-up. But by the end of April 2023, that is last year, this number has dropped to 504 beneficiaries, which as at end, or rather 13th March this year, the number has dropped a further to around 60 beneficiaries. The status to date and nationally, 7,428 applicants have benefited from the spaza shop support program since it was first introduced. The spaza shop program is continuing, and CIFA, we are working now with CEDA because it is it has been decided that it must be jointly implemented by the two institutions. The spaza shop top-up process is still ongoing. And of the 5,440 applicants, 5,380 of them, which is 99% of the original number, have accessed the 7,000 top-ups. 60, which is about 1% of applicants, are still remaining untraceable. And these ones were the applicants that were actually funded through Standard Bank. And to ensure, Chair, that there's no duplication of actually accessing the grant, we are also looking between the database of NetBank and the Standard Bank database to ensure that these 60 actually do not double dip. We have also reinforced the decision to follow up on the requested statement from Standard Bank to actually ensure that this happens. Chair and members, of the 60 applicants, about one of them has passed on and one of them has actually accessed the money. And the decision, Chair, that we've taken as an institution that by the end of March this year, if the remaining 58 applicants still remain untraceable to claim the 7,000 top-up, that money is going to be reallocated now to new applicants so that we don't hold the funds forever. And that in the next 2 weeks, the decision that we will have to make as an institution. And then that money, the balance of that money will then be jointly allocated to new applicants in our program that we're implementing with CEDA. Now moving to the IntelliMatch Financial Services, that is now the wholesaler that defrauded CIFA. IFS, in short, IntelliMatch, is a CIFA-funded intermediary that was that also funded one of their clients, King's and Queen's Hat. CIFA concluded a wholesale funding agreement with IntelliMatch for funding of clients in the manufacturing sector. The total loan was 30 million as per the agreement, and 20 million was dispersed as the first tranche, and the subsequent 10 million was dispersed. The loan was secured by a guarantee from Tautona Holdings, which was a holding company of IFS, or IntelliMatch Financial Services. IFS breached the agreement as it failed to meet its repayment obligations towards CIFA in terms of the loan. On the 16th of March 2023, CIFA commenced legal proceedings to recover the whole amount of 30 million from IFS and Tautona. Following the portfolio committee visit, CIFA further uncovered alleged irregularities or financial misconduct in the reporting and application of CIFA funds by IntelliMatch Financial Services. CIFA currently is proceeding with legal action, and there's a pop-up, let me just remove it, I don't know why it was made, what made people. Patona, as well as we actually proceeding with legal actions against IFS and Tautona, as well as instituting legal action against the directors of both companies in their personal capacities. An application for money judgment was issued and served to Intelmesh Financial Services and Tautona as a guarantor, and the matter was set down on the unopposed roll for the 2nd of February this year, 2024, in which a default judgment was granted on the 13th of February, 2024. Further, a warrant of execution against Intelimage and Tautona has been sent to the Register of the High Court for authorization, and it will be served on IFS and Tautona as soon as the Registrar issues or signs it off. CIFA has also instituted legal action for the recovery of the 30 million against the directors of IFS Tautona in their personal capacities. On about the 22nd of December 2023, the sheriff attempted to serve combined summons in terms of Section 218, subsection 2 on the directors of IFS and Tautona. We received no returns of non-service. We received returns of non-service as the directors were not located in their registered addresses. CIFA has instructed a forensic firm to actually trace the directors, and we managed to trace them into their new addresses. And now we have instructed actually the sheriff to start executing the attachments of their properties in an effort to recover the monies that they owe the institution. In addition to that, Chair, there was also a report that was instituted by the board of CIFA to investigate whether there were any involvement of CIFA employees with fraud, and also to check whether there was what we call a fraud that involved our staff. Some of the employees were suspended pending the report by Ernst & Young. The Ernst & Young report was issued in September 2023, and at the same time, we opened a criminal case against the directors of Intelimatch with the South African Police Services. The reason being that Ernst & Young Forensics could not access the bank accounts of these directors. Therefore, we needed now the police, particularly the Hawks, to follow the money to check where else did the money, that 30 million after it was dispersed, did it go? Did it go to any of the CIFA employees? Did it go to any other person other than the clients that it was intended for? So that is the next step now going forward, to follow the money so that we can be able to arrest those who would have benefited from this, including those ghost clients of Intelimage. Also, Chair, following this release of the Ernst & Young report, the board instructed executive, myself in particular, to execute consequence management. We took a decision, Chair, to appoint an independent law firm to actually provide us with a chairperson, an advocate, to oversee the hearings. That matter, Chair, is still ongoing, and we await, and hopefully the hearings will be concluded before the end of April this year. And then we'll act against those found guilty by the independent chairperson from the law firm, as would be guided by that report. Now, Chair, looking at some of the interventions that we put in place as part of lessons learned. Number one, sponsorship support program. We have redesigned our sponsorship support programs, and we are implementing this newly redesigned sponsorship support program with the CEDA, and also in preparation for the merger of the two entities. We have also approved a facility of about 75 million working with an intermediary to provide support to the spaza shops with regard to bulk buying, installation of solar energy, and rather to counteract the impact of load shedding, growth capital for expansion of spaza shops, and also capacitation of shops with technology, your point of sale systems, and training in financial management. The performance of the program will be closely monitored, and updates will be provided to the portfolio committee on an ongoing basis. There was also a further instruction shared by the committee that we needed to review the interest rates that our intermediaries, particularly in the microfinance space, were charging the end users. We actually initiated that study internally as CIFA, and we picked up the outcomes initially showed serious financial implications on the side of the state, as we would have to subsidize those end users and also assist the intermediaries to carry the cost of lending, because the cost of lending for smaller loans is very, very high. And we know it is safer from experience. And if we are to see the sustainability of that channel for us to access our clients who are really the poorest of the poor and the bottom of the barrel, the rural women that we finance through microfinance, we needed to make sure that the interest rate that they're charged is affordable, but at the same time, the vehicle that we use, the intermediary, is sustainable. So the board then decided that we needed to have an independent a consultant to do the review of the interest rates, not only for the microfinance beneficiaries, but also for our other wholesale SMME beneficiaries. What we've done, therefore, Chair, in the interim, we've partnered with some of our beneficiaries through the TREP program, where we actually give them loans at the discounted rate, but with the clear instruction that they will only lend to the beneficiaries at a cap of 5% as part of the rules of the TREP as designed by the department. We then commissioned, Chair, as instructed by the board, a comprehensive review of the interest rates right across the intermediary partnerships from microfinance to your SMME wholesale. But we now going to be focusing, Chair, on using TREP funding to provide that access to finance for the SMEs with that capped amount of 5% until that study is done, which will inform the whole funding model for the intermediary business. The other interventions to support the sustainability of the institution, we looked as part of the lessons learned from the intermediary in telematch, chairperson, and their fraudulent behavior. That one of the biggest weaknesses was that our agreements did not allow us to go directly to the end users to verify their existence. That is now the clients of the intermediary. And we've changed our legal agreements now that as CIFA, we will visit the end users of our intermediaries with or without their permission so that we can have these mystery shopper or surprise visits to these end users to counter this issue of having a ghost clients from the side of some of these intermediaries. Our new agreements now are focusing on that. And then the intermediaries report to CIFA on a monthly basis, and our post-investment employees, our account managers, visit the intermediaries on a monthly basis. The reason really, or the purpose of those visits, to verify the reported information and visit the intermediaries funded, intermediary funded clients to ensure the accuracy and, more importantly, the authenticity of the information that these intermediaries provide. Also, review the governance of the intermediaries
with regards to compliance with the NCR and tax compliance, and also looking at governance as it relates to the funding provided by SEFA. Also want to make sure that if there are changes to the shareholders and directors of those intermediaries, as SEFA were made aware, because some of these directors, they stand surety for the loans. We provide chair and members monthly reports to the board on the performance of the intermediaries. I must say, Chair, we are also looking at having sector-focused intermediaries, because one of the best lessons learned is in the microfinance. Your intermediaries like SEF or Small Enterprise Foundation and Paramani, we've been working with those intermediaries for the longest of time. I mean, SEF has been in partnership with SEFA for more than 20 years since the inception of Kula. And we've never had this fraudulent conduct. With SMME wholesale, that's where you pick up a lot of fraud. And in the main, you get a lot of fly-by-nights who want to play in that space. We're saying now we want to use a much more sector-focused approach in these intermediaries like we do with the microfinance, so that we've got partnerships that are long-term sustainable and that are built on trust to counter all these activities. Chairperson, that is the story today, and we'll ask the committee to note the report. Thank you.
Thank you very much, CE, for that report. Members, there you have it. This is the progress report from SEFA on the recommendation that we had done in our oversight visit to Northwest. The three issues was the spaza shops, the telematch, and then also the interest rate. I note hand, so Honorable Kruger, you will be first. I also want to acknowledge the chair of SEFA, and then also the DG. Welcome to the platform. Honorable Kruger, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. Chair, just one question. I would just like for SEFA to just shortly explain us what benefit all this implementation of the report and what went wrong in the past and what will go right in the future, what benefits can they see will be to the benefit of small SMMEs, especially, informal business life? Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Kruger. Honorable Mayeni, I note you. The floor is yours.
Thanks, Chair. Let me greet honourable members and welcome their presentation. I've got only one question, honourable Chairperson. Is that does the department have a detailed profile of cooperatives and enterprises that are linked to global market? That is what I wanted to ask Chairperson. Thanks.
Honourable Muller, you next.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. Thank you, Honourable Chair. Question that I thank you. We welcome the report. My question that I wanted to ask is: all clients in the Northwest who were selected for the visit received 3,500 rand between 2020 and 2021. The additional top-up for applicants, which was 7,000 rand, commenced with disbursement in 2022, and it was received by some, and some were not even aware of the additional grant. Can you please provide a detailed explanation on why other clients were not even aware of the additional grant? Thank you for that, Chair. Honourable Chair.
Honourable April. Honourable April, you next, and then Honourable Matulelwa.
Chairperson, am I audible?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay, Chairperson, come to the presentation, but and welcome the fact that there's some acknowledgements they said that one can see consequence management and the potential of reoccurrence of
Honorable April. The sound is not coming. No. The sound is not coming through clearly.
Can you hear me better now, Chair?
Let's see. Let's try again. Okay, go for it.
My question is, Chairperson, I want to welcome the presentation, and then I want to ask, how is CIFA planning to provide opportunities for the vulnerable people living in the rural areas like in the Northwest and in the Northern Cape, our peri-urban and our township areas, through improving post-investment and monitoring funded enterprises? Also, not forgetting that the scourge of load shedding that it has had a big effect on many of the CIFA clients in the urban areas. What is CIFA planning to do in terms of those that cannot afford to repay their loans, as it were, now due to the load shedding that has affected their businesses? That is my question. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable April. Honorable Matulelwe, you next, and welcome.
Thank you very much. Greetings to honorable members and all our colleagues in the portfolio committee. Mine is not that long with CIFA. I'm very, very in hurry of the implementation of the bill that I believe that is going to answer all questions that we have. For now, what I wanted to say is that can CIFA give us a breakdown on damage control or on some of the issues and similar in all nine provinces, the ones that we got in Northwest, and then can they bring us a report on all spaza shops that were given 3,000 instead of 10,000, and then if they did fix everything, they must give us names and details of all spaza shops with a fixed fee. Their report must be tabled like this. Following spaza shops in Gauteng, Eastern Cape, and everywhere else in KZN, they had a similar problem with the spaza shops in Northwest, 3,000. Then later on, their 7,000 was top up. And then we want that progress report, and also in particular, those we visited in Northwest, you remember there was a big farm where we did not find a owner there, and the money, the millions, they were not accounted for. We want answers. Was there any recovery, or was there any found as a fault? We remember all or wherever maybe they will answer with Northwest and then give us an overall report in all provinces. Thank you very much, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Matulelwa. I recognize the whip, Honorable Tlomela.
Thanks, Chair. Let me also, I'll switch off my video. These days were struggling a little bit in the morning, in the afternoon, but during the day, everything is fine. I just want to acknowledge and appreciate the presentation. And indeed, must indicate that that's why we are pleased with the progress. But there's still a lot of work that can be done, Chairperson. You remember during this presentation, we have number of resolution in our previous meeting. And when you want to trace progress, you look at what is it that has been done. But according to the presentation, there are areas where I've learned that there are legal actions that have been taken, and also the recovery plan. And what I liked about the feedback is that the recovery plan is based on an individual who has done the corruption, not the entire SMEs. Now,
also has captured the issue of there will be a plan of retaining or regaining that money that was misused by individuals within the SMEs that were supposed to get assistance from the help. So Chairperson, I welcome the report and say honestly there is a progress. One, we must just say that there is a progress. The only disadvantage is that we are coming towards the end of our term. I think we'll be getting the feedback regularly as to how far are they in terms of implementing the rest of the issues. Then what if they don't come to the party? Because already there is progress. We must acknowledge, you must not be hard on the CIFA on what they have done. Now we must only get now the explanation. What is it that they are going to do as far as when they have claimed this money that has been used on a personal capacity for the people that have already done the misconduct? But my question, Chair, is I've learned that the IFS breached the agreement and it's failed to meet the repayment obligation towards CIFA as far as the terms of loan is concerned. On the 16th of May 2023, Chair, CIFA commenced legal proceedings to recover the whole amount of 30,000 against the IFS and Tautuna. Can they clarify us or provide the timeline as the department on the finalization of the matter? That the department has instituted a legal action for the recovery. What if then they don't come up on party? What is it that they are intending to do? If they find that that person does not have anything, are they going to attach or what is it that they are going to do? And the last question will be, does the department have a detailed proof of cooperatives and enterprises that are linked to the global market? So that is my question, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you, honorable members, for those very important questions. What we'll do it in this order. We'll ask the responses from first the CE, and then we'll ask the chair, and then we'll ask finally the DG to respond to some of the issues in that order. CE, over to you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you to the members for the questions. Let me start with the Honorable Kruger with regards to the benefits for the SMEs on the implementation of these recommendations. One of the things that, Chair, we want to drive, as I said, we've seen the success of the microfinance program. Our intervention in the microfinance program per year, Chair, provides more than 60,000 rand access to rural women. Those are the ones that I call the bottom of the barrel. And what it does also, Honorable Kruger, the dignity that you provide to those women through this funding, and you're taking these people away from the 350 grant and giving them the dignity to generate funding that sustains their livelihoods. I mean, Sepita didn't bring this other video of a student who recently graduated the TUT in Gauteng. And she was thanking SEF, which is our intermediary, for giving her mother the loan to continuously buy and sell the goods that she was trading on and managed to take her through to varsity. So we are being, actually we're able to see, Honorable Kruger, the impact there with the intervention that we put through the microfinance base. Also with TREP, we, with the new interventions that we're putting in place, Chairperson, around the interest rate and capping the interest rate for TREP-funded clients through our new intermediaries, we are giving, because 5% share is far below even the roaring, what we call interest rate in the market. Is it about 12 now? What? Because you see, 5% is like a prime minus 7%, give or take, you know. That is going to give access to affordable funding to those rural women and males, let me say, Honorable Kruger, through those interventions. So the oversight role played by the committee really highlighted issues where we needed then to change the way we do things. I'll put it that way, Honorable Kruger. And
and the testing is in the pudding, I must say, but we're seeing the results already. Then I'll leave to the department, the one of linked spaza shops to global products. Honorable Mula, the issue of the clients in the Northwest, all of them, as I articulated it in my presentation, all the Northwest clients receive their money. We have statements from partner bank, NetBank, to prove that effect. Those who were not aware that there was money, because what we did, we disbursed funding or we transfer funds to our partner bank, NetBank. You will ask why were we not doing it ourselves? The banks have got a better footprint than us as CIFA in the country. So they are much more accessible physically for our people in various parts of the country. So the money was credited into their what we call bank accounts, because NetBank gave them what we call closed loop cards. Those cards are the cards that they use to procure goods and services on specified and selected what we call wholesalers. Now what happens is that, as you will know, honorable member, when money gets into your bank account, you get an SMS. But the challenge we face with a majority of these clients, they change these pay-as-you-go SIM cards. The bank sends the notification, the person is no longer using that SIM card. That's what complicated lives in that. We tried to use the emails, and the majority of them, they use Gmail. They don't have the resources to have their own personalized email addresses. And we picked up the same issue that email people have more than one email address. And now we had to go further and advertise in local community radio stations and local newspapers to alert people that please go and check your bank accounts. The money is in your bank account. And finally, they accessed the money, and all of those in the Northwest accessed it. I did mention, Chair, in my presentation that the national figure of those, what to call, spaza shops was also reported upon, that we had about 5,440 of these applicants. And this is a national figure now, Chairperson. And 5,380 of those applicants have accessed the money, which is 99% of the original number. And only by now, 58 of them that are untraceable. And I even said, Chairperson, the money for those 58 now is going to be transferred to the new applicants, because we can't keep on tracing somebody for 2 years for a grant, because now we are denying access to finance to those who are ready to access the funding. So yes, the national numbers have been actually tasked, and we're closing those 58 by the end of this month. And CIDA has already advertised the new program that we are doing together, and we'll be processing new applicants. Honorable April, I did touch upon in my response to Honorable Kruger on how we're going to provide opportunities to rural people. And then I spoke to the TREP program, the new TREP program, and also spoke to the microfinance program, and the interest rate that we're cutting now to 5% for those end users. With regards to those applicants who are hit by load shedding and they are unable to meet their financial obligations, what we've done, that we are restructuring those loans. Because some of them, we bought these generators so that they can operate during load shedding. But what we picked up is that the cost of fuel actually becomes a disincentive for them to run these generators. So we are looking at a number of interventions to assist them to sustain their businesses. One of them is to restructure the debt and give them a longer repayment period so that the debit, what called the repayment amounts, are lesser until ESCOM one day is able to give us guaranteed security of supply of energy. But we will be putting those interventions in place internally, and also looking at the other alternative sources of energy to keep them operating. Honorable Matulelwa, I spoke with the issue of the spaza shops and the numbers nationally. And also, one thing we didn't provide are the names, which we are really willing to do that because we have the names and the ID numbers of these beneficiaries working with NetBank, and that can be provided, Chair, also. But those numbers are the ones that I spoke to in my presentation. Honorable Tumelang, the issue of the legal process is, honorable members, once it goes to court, we know it is beyond our control. And we're happy to get that judgment, I mean, in February this year. We were anticipating that it may come through later this year. But we were able to push until we secured that judgment. Now we're working to attach the assets of those directors. So it's a process, once it becomes legal and it is in court, we have very limited control to push it. But we are clear in our minds that the starting point is to recover the 30 million. Secondly, get them arrested, because we are in court recovering the money on the one hand. We are also with the law enforcement agencies to get them arrested. And our plan, Chair, was that in our litigation strategy, if I may say, was that get the money first, then get them arrested, because we want to recover that 30 million. And the backlog with SAPS, we've appealed to the Hawks directly that we like these cases to be prioritized so that we can have closure sooner rather than later. But our ultimate goal, Chair and members, is to attach the assets of the culprits. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, CE. Chairperson, any comments from your side before I ask the DG to conclude? Mr. Bonakele? If nothing, if there's no additions, then DG, over to you.
I'm so sorry, Chair. I was struggling to unmute.
Welcome, welcome.
And I'm sorry, I joined late. I was battling to join, but I didn't miss much because I'm familiar with the presentation. I think I'm just going to touch on three things very, very briefly. The first one is the spaza shops. You will recall that I joined this board about 4 months ago, and before that I had been with the Competition Commission, and we had produced a report on the spaza shops and how we thought they could be empowered, especially locally owned spaza shops in townships and rural areas. And we've asked management to go back and provide a comprehensive and sustainable spaza shop support system. So, I mean, it's okay that we're giving them now a once-off kind of cash to offset their losses during COVID. But what we want is a product that will make them competitive against foreign-owned spaza shops and really sustainable working with our community. So we don't want a once-off transaction with a spaza shop. We want those spaza shops to actually have an incentive to register with CIFA, because once they are on the CIFA program, they are going to get a sustainable support. So I literally want every spaza shop to have a CIFA card. And once they have that CIFA card, they have access to discounts that we would have facilitated and in some instances even funded from wholesalers. I want them to be organized and as an almost single buyer group. Once you are in the CIFA program, we help you to purchase, to bargain. For example, if you are buying airtime from telcos to on-sell, we can bring them together and buy as a single group, just like PEP is doing when they buy airtime. We're not looking for a once-off. We really are looking at them, for example, having access to the same distribution centers. If we're looking at a township like Soweto, we want working with entrepreneurs to put a single distribution center there that will be able to supply our spaza shops. We're looking at developing systems, for example, that could be able to manage their inventory, their stock, and so on. So that's work in progress, but that's really the major thing that we want to achieve by the next year so that it's sustainable. So let me not take too much time on that. The second thing I wanted to mention was, with these intermediaries, the CE is right. We're seeing a lot of fly-by-night. But the answer is also not to prevent new entrants from coming in, because there are new, mainly black-owned intermediaries that are coming into the picture. Just yesterday, we were discussing about how do we support these without exposing ourselves to corruption. And one of the things we need to do is to create capacity within FIFA to work with intermediaries. I mean, intermediaries are manageable because they are not too many. If we have 15 of them, we have a unit that is specifically looking at them. By the way, that support is not only to watch for fraud and corruption, which is important. It's also about assisting them to be sustainable so that we put people in their boards, for example, who can be providers with early warnings when things are going wrong, even in the market, beyond just fraud and corruption. So there, again, we're looking at a more sustainable approach to supporting them. And just lastly, on the globally connected SMMEs, these two we discussed as part of our strategy. You know, there are people who say SMMEs don't trade globally. And I challenged executives at CIFA to say, just go to Bait Bridge and see the cross-border trade that's taking place there. And then you will see the opportunity that's presented by the free trade area in the African continent. So we also want to develop a package for these SMMEs that trade beyond the border. And the most important thing, Chair, about them also is insurance. Because once you get outside, then there are a whole lot of risks that they are facing. And we're finding that the insurance products that are available are either too expensive, so they go without insurance. And also trade missions. Trade missions tend to target large incumbents. And there's not much thinking about incorporating SMMEs into trade missions. But we think that there's a huge opportunity in the continent, especially in SADC, to promote cross-border trade to SMMEs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you so much, Chair. DG, you'll have the last bite on this.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and greetings to you and the members. Firstly, I just want to commit that as a department, we will continuously monitor this specific report, but also other work that as part of our oversight role, but also other work that is being done at CIFA and also at CIDA, but specifically because we are talking about CIFA, so that we can monitor and make sure that all the commitments that are made here are implemented. So through our entity oversight unit, we will be able to do so. But specifically, Chairperson, on the issue of the cooperatives and SMMEs that are exposed globally, for this financial year, we had targeted 200 SMMEs and cooperatives to be exposed. And currently, as we speak to date, we are at 187, which is below the 200. But next week, we have Mauritius and London that is planned, and that will take us actually beyond the planned 200. But again, we are also going to submit the list so that we don't just talk of numbers. We will be in a position to submit the list of those specific cooperatives and SMMEs that are exposed. Thank you very much for the opportunity, Chairperson.
Thank you, colleagues. So I think if I can also just put my voice in the room, I want us to, as members, acknowledge the role that we collectively played in bringing oversight and ensuring accountability. So I want to first say thank all of the members across all the parties. When we visited Northwest, we saw there was a lot of problems, lots of challenges. I see Honorable Tulelwa coming in, so let me give you another chance. I wanted to wrap up on this one. Tulelwa? Honorable Tulelo.
Oh, thank you, Chair. Sorry for interruption, Chairperson. I just wanted to say that we need that farm. We saw that farm. It can be utilized in a position where I had the response from CIFA that I did see that it produces many things, whatever, in the under government, and then be given to people as part of the monitoring that you are talking about, and then it be monitored. We need a government to a lot of a tomato. It can be correct. So I just wanted to say that in part of the assets, we need that farm, because that person did not show a remorse or anything that is interested to give accountability to us as the parliament and the people, that the money is being passed through us. So that's what I wanted to say. And also, Chair, I don't want this meeting to go down as if we are happy with the intermediary thing. This intermediary thing, I would suggest that if it's possible, maybe inside the department, can't we do a intermediary part as the department on behalf of our people, that rather than giving people and facilitating private people to be intermediaries? I don't agree with this intermediary part, Chairperson. Sorry to interrupt, and thank you for the second chance, Chairperson.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Honorable Matulelo. I was going to pick up the farm issue, but let me try to do a quick summary. So my first point I wanted to make was the importance of oversight, the importance of this portfolio committee. It was through our interventions as a collective, through our recommendations to the department, that we see now policy changes and shift. And I think there is room for improvement, but I think general people are happy with the progress made. I think, Chairperson, we as the portfolio committee is very interested in the report on empowering SPASA across the country. So we are keen to maybe be part of that. We also note the progress on the SPASA shops. When we went to Northwest, it was a big problem because informal traders were to go to, I think it was the big town of Rustenburg, travel exorbitant amounts, and it was just a mess. But things are seeming to be better now. We also want to ensure that our SPASA shops are owned by South Africans. And so I think we are keen for a rollout. We are keen that this program be successful. And DG, we are happy with the where it wants to go. But I'm saying to the chair and to the CE that the ideas of the distribution center, the volumes, those are all exciting ideas. And I think we look forward to the implementation. You know, 7,000 rand is just a start, but we're glad that there's now solar energy incentives, there's a cash register, there's those incentives for small business to ensure that they are sustainable. But I think the buying power and the distribution services is additional services that we as government. So hopefully there can be a new chain where all of these SPASA shops can buy from one South African owned entity and serve our communities. And so that we look forward to the future on the SPASA shops. It is important. We're saying that we want to buy local, and our townships also must be owned by locals. And we also don't want our big multinationals to encroach in the space of our small businesses. We want to protect and regulate and ensure that our small business is covered. With regard to the getting back of the money and IntelliMatch and Tautona and the default, I think we acknowledge that we follow the money. We want zero tolerance on corruption, and we want consequences. So we want to see people in yellow overalls. We acknowledge that the law takes its time. But you see, stealing from the state is also stealing from the people and our poor community. So We have a zero tolerance towards that. And I think all of us, irrespective of our political different party persuasions, we want to have clean governance and accountability. What we saw with Kings and Queens was not on. We went to a place where there was no, where there was nothing, and they defrauded the state of 30 million rand. There was also a farm, and I think that was also something that we wanted to follow the money. All of this is in our report. I just forget the name of that farm that we went, where we as members were given the runaround, and the farm was bought and equipment was bought, but I think there was some challenges around that. And I think we want to, DG, just a follow-up on that. I think there was a request for a broader, because we only went into to KZN, Gauteng, and we went to Gauteng and KZN because of the riots, and then we went to Northwest. But I think what we need to do going forward is to get regular reports across the province, and I think that was something that we're asking DG, you to table, that we need to get regular reports on the SPASA support program across the different provinces and breakdown. I think we note the resolution that most of it is covered and the 60 outstanding is not coming forward. So if they're not coming forward, maybe your approach of putting that money to new 60 people is a considered approach. I think we will watch the space around the microfinance, and so I think we welcome that access to finance. We want affordable finance for our people, and our first big bite is the banks. The banks give more money to consumer goods. So if I want to buy a big Ferrari of 2 million rand, they will give me credit quickly. But if I want to buy a tractor of 1 million rand, they won't, because I don't have collateral. And if they give, the interest rate is quite high. And so we appreciate the role that our department is playing, because we do provide affordable finance to our people. 5% is amazing. I wish I could get a loan for 5%. We're not allowed to, but that is an amazing rate, and we want to commend the team, minister, and the team for pushing this out. But more South Africans must get the benefit of it, and we need to encourage South Africans to pay the loan back. You know, if it's just like NSFAS, if we don't pay it forward, if I get a loan of 30,000 rand for my father's shop or anything else, and I make money and I'm able to pay the 5% loan off, then there would be another person that would be able to get the money. So the impairment rates is important. So we want to encourage that this is not SASSA, this is not free money, this is entrepreneurial money. It's how government wants to enable and empower and to give a hand up to our people. So I think with that, we want to note this report, and we thank the team for presenting, and also for all the members' inputs, and it also shows the power of oversight and accountability. Thank you, members. Thank you, DJ and team. I think we'll then move off to this from this point, and feel free to stay in the platform, or we can excuse the team from the department. But thank you again. I'm going to immediately move over to the next item, which is the first draft of the legacy report. Colleagues, I'm going to ask Mr. Gumede to take us through this report. So this is the report that we're going to submit to Parliament and to our people as an account of what we as this portfolio committee has done in the last 5 years. So the report, I'm sure, it's very extensive. And we'd want members to engage with it, and hopefully we will get also inputs. It's alive, it's a living document, and we want to thank the team led by Mr. Gumede for this draft. Hopefully you will acknowledge that it is an accurate reflection of the work that we've done, and we'd also want you to give your inputs so that we can enrich it, and hopefully just sign off on it next week. But over to you, Mr. Gumede. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Morning, honorable members. Let me quickly open this report. I thought it was opened already. I hope it's showing on your side, honorable Chairperson.
Yes, I can see it. Please proceed.
No, that's fine. Chair, this is the draft report. It's a preliminary report that I've prepared for the members. The report is not taking into account CIFA responses that we received, I think, the day before, inputs from the members themselves, which is basically this is an opportunity for the members to make any amendments, alterations, changes, subtractions in the report. There is also one or two information that needs to be incorporated that I would have received from my colleague King and Mr. Dodo, particularly the master's attendancy. So that's where we are. The report is about 42 pages long, not very long, considering that there are tables in the report. In terms of the overview, Chairperson, the report is divided into two sections, which is the executive summary and the main body. The executive summary begins on page 2 by just providing a background information on how the parliament is formed, its relationship with the constitution, our responsibility as parliament in terms of producing the legislation, in terms of overseeing the executive, in terms of overseeing the financial and non-financial performance of the department and entities. On page 3, it also reflects on the committee programs per year and on whether the objectives of such programs were achieved. We give just a highlight, Chairperson, to say the committee reviewed its 5-year strategic plan and prioritized 4 crucial areas that it sought to deliver on. We call these thematic areas. At the beginning of the term, we looked at the access to finance for small enterprises, access to markets, including constantly monitoring developments in the procurement bill, bureaucratic red tape, as well as premises and infrastructure. We did a number of engagements with the sector, for instance, your SANACO, your NASA, your SACOBA. We also processed one legislation, the Small Enterprise Amendment Bill. It hasn't been completed. It's currently with the NCOP. And then we were supposed to consider the Business Amendment Bill. Unfortunately, the department could not refer that particular bill to Parliament. However, it is currently with the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. Hopefully, we'll be able to consider it during the 7th Parliament. In processing the bill, the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill, we also delivered on one of the key critical deliverables of Parliament, which is the public participation. We received all our oral and written submissions, which we considered from the stakeholders, from the government, from the academia, and from the industries, to mention just a few. Due to the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic and also associated reprioritization of budgets, we were only able to perform just one oversight visit to Northwest Province. We also performed one fact-finding visit in August 2021 to the provinces of Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal following the civil unrest that befell in those two regions in April 2021. Chairperson, overall, the committee did well, although it did not achieve all of its stated objectives due to circumstances beyond its control, such as the referral of the Business Amendment Bill. It was one of our targets deliverable, but unfortunately, it was not referred to a parliament, as I've indicated earlier on. In terms of the committee focus areas during the 6th Parliament, it was really the implementation of the key deliverables that were flagged during the 5th Parliament Legacy Report, It was to meet the obligations to oversee the application of Parliament's strategic plan for the sixth Parliament and associated annual performance plan. It was to process legislation, to carry out stakeholder engagements with numerous small enterprise representatives, big business, and we also had expert testimonies from time to time by inviting experts in areas to present to the committee as and when necessary. It facilitated public participation, examination of DSPD work, including the agencies, through the budget review process. We also looked at the introduction of practices of engaging the entities of the Auditor General. They were very instrumental, Chairperson, during the consideration of the annual reports. Key areas for future work, we look at strengthening of the committee capacity for oversight through the adoption of a committee strategic plan and annual plans to direct the committee's oversight. This is now for the seventh Parliament. We should also prioritize regular reviews of the committee's progress as far as achieving identified objectives, periodic and impromptu visits to the beneficiaries of the department and entities, financial and non-financial support. In particular, the committee is overseeing a number of programs geared towards providing financial support. Honorable Chair, these require continuous monitoring. The fact that only one oversight visit was conducted only in 2023 is an indictment on Parliament's oversight mechanism. Filling of vacant posts, which is often the source of understanding and underperformance by the department, is one area that should be looked into during the seventh Parliament, as well as the finalization of key legislations, policies, and strategies that have remained incomplete since during the fifth Parliament. The department should address issues related to its vacancy rate, as it has an impact on its budget and oversight functions. And the last one, Chairperson, we observed the regression in terms of the audit outcomes as reported by the Auditor General. We therefore say this is one particular issue or intervention that the seventh Parliament would have to pay particular attention to during the next Parliament. Key challenges emerging. There are deficiencies in the current oversight paradigm that have a direct impact on the pace with which the committee would want to see service delivery hastened or increased. Chairperson, in South Africa, legislative organs have a constitutional obligation to scrutinize and oversee executive action and any other governmental organ, and on the basis of that, make recommendations. We are observing that the slow pace and in some instances, outright failure by both the department and entities to implement committee recommendation has proved to be a source of frustration, not only for our committees, honorable members, also for other committees of parliament. It's a trend across committees of parliament. Recommendations of the committees, unfortunately, have no binding effect. Accordingly, there is always outstanding feedback on recommendations submitted to the department and entities. Increasing budget cuts and government-wide cost containment measures constrain the capacity of the department and entities from fully implementing their mandate. Combat parliamentary program partly constrained the time available for the committee to conduct follow-up site visits. Like I indicated earlier on, honorable members, we only did one oversight visit during the current term of Parliament. Therefore, in terms of recommendations over and above the ones towards the end of this report, Chair, we are saying the Parliament should consider developing a system for the facilitation, monitoring, and tracking of executive responses to the committee recommendations and resolutions. I must admit, Chairperson, our tracking tool in this particular period was not as effective as during the fifth Parliament. Maybe it's one area that during the seventh Parliament we need to revise. Ensure that the recommendations have specified time frames for the executives to respond. We are also saying there should be an improvement on cooperative governance by holding cross-sectoral meetings. For instance, there was one meeting that we were planning to hold with the committee that is holding the National Treasury accountable. Unfortunately, that meeting could not materialize. The committee should recommend for more budgetary support to the work of the department and the two departmental entities. We observed, honorable members, that due to the advent of the COVID-19 pandemic, there were a lot of reprioritization of budgets away from the department and entities. The committee should also increase intensity and conduct more oversight visits to the beneficiaries and projects sponsored by the department and entities. All entities within the, it's a typo here, that type of, I shall remove. Monitor the implementation of the BRRR recommendations as well as additional recommendations as indicated. They are outlined under Section 15 of this report. Chair, I'm not going to dwell much on the areas that are not grey listed. This is just the background information in terms of the introduction, the departments and entities falling within the committee's portfolio, which is the Department of Small Enterprise, the Department of Small Business Development, and the areas where they are supposed to deliver in as far as the National Development Plan is concerned, also in as far as the MTSF is concerned. Some of the key policy areas that the department was expected to deliver on was around the Economic Reconstruction and Recovery Plan, reimagine the industrial strategy, etc. Then there are two entities reporting to the department, as we all know. This is Small Enterprise Development Agency and the Small Enterprise Finance Agency. The functions of the committee, honorable members, are spelled out in the Constitution of the Republic of South Africa, which is to legislate, to exercise oversight and carry out any other responsibility assigned by the parliament, and also to exercise or to bring legislators face to face with bureaucrats. Then in terms of the method of work of this particular committee, Chair, we're saying ordinarily what we did, we engaged with the department and entities through briefings, as is customary in parliament. We considered the strategic plans, annual performance plans, budget and annual reports of the department and its entities. We also supervised the implementation of the department and entities programs and budgetary as per the APPs for each relevant medium term and MTF period. Chair, we also engaged with the Auditor General. At some point, we were visited by the Financial and Fiscal Commission. We also engaged with the DPSA in as far as the organogram of the department is concerned. Our meetings were predominantly on Wednesday mornings from 9:30 to 1 via a virtual platform. Unfortunately, we report, Chair, that we lost our chairperson towards the end of the term, Mavi. The date is subject to correction. And then an active role was assumed by you, Honorable Chair Jacobs, and then you were later appointed permanently as the chairperson of the committee for the remainder of the term. There was an addition to the members of the committee. Ms. Muller joined us. The date is subject to correction again. The committee membership was constituted by members of the ANC, ATM, DA, EFF, IFP, UDM. There are also additions, two more additions that are missing in this particular one. The committee was backed by a staff complement of 5, including the content advisor, committee secretary, committee researcher, committee assistant, and executive secretary. The purpose of the report, Chairperson, is self-explanatory. I'm not going to go through it in the interest of time. The key statistics, Chair, we're not done with our meetings. Unfortunately, we won't be able to finalize how many meetings were held during this particular period. The legislation process, again, there is one that we have processed. However, it's incomplete. So the the information that is given in this table is subject to change depending on the developments at NCOP and whether the president will ultimately sign the National Small Enterprise Bill into an act. Chair, in terms of the stakeholders, the most prominent one was the Auditor General. We were engaging the AG on a regular basis when we were considering the annual reports of the department. And then briefings or public hearings, we did have national public hearings when we considered the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill. In this instance, the committee had an opportunity to interact with a number of key constituencies and stakeholders across all 9 provinces. We made an observation, honourable members, that the public participation to be effective and meaningful in future when conducting public education on the bill, the parliamentary public participation unit should be accompanied by either a researcher or a content advisor or a committee secretary in order to assist with content-related matters during their training session. We observed, honourable members, that the process of crafting a new bill or amending the existing one is highly technical. Furthermore, the committee stressed the agency and the need for the unit to ensure that it engages with relevant government ministries, especially with respect to the executive bill, like the one we considered, including the participation of parliamentary constituency offices, councillors, provincial and local speakers before the actual participation process is resumed. Chair, in terms of the challenges we encountered, in as far as processing of this particular legislation is concerned, technical or operational challenges, we are saying the 6th Parliament experienced persistent challenges regarding the late submission of briefing documents and presentations by the department and, to a certain degree, entities. This compromised the intensity with which the committee can engage with the subject or topic on which they are briefed by the department or any other entity or stakeholder. Inability to timely validate performance information by the department for quarterly reporting had a negative impact on the committee's oversight of the department's quarterly report. Poor monitoring of the agencies falling under the department is one area that we noted during this particular period, the main one being a lack of monitoring of, for instance, CIFA as an entity of the department. As a result, most suspensions and subsequent dismissals, including laying of criminal charges, have often been triggered or at the instance of the committee oversight. The agencies, it could be, honourable members, there are investigations that have been conducted by the department that the committee is not aware of. For instance, we note that when CIFA reported, there are other investigations that are being done by the agency, but these have not been reported to Parliament. So we won't know if CIFA don't report this. The agencies, on the other hand, do not exercise oversight over their service providers. The CEO just reported on this particular one to say they want to intensify oversight over these particular intermediaries. In some instances, the department and agencies do not even know the exact location of the projects they support. This was evident, honourable members, when we visited in Northwest, that both the agencies and the department did not even know where some of these projects are located. Then content-related matters, honourable members, the department often submits incomplete information to the committee or does not submit the specific information that is requested by the committee. For example, information on MTSF targets, the requested reports on specific issues, project profiles for oversight purposes. In some instances, there have been failure by entities to effectively address repeat audit outcomes of their annual performance plans, as highlighted by the Auditor General of South Africa, particularly with CIFA, honourable members. We have noticed that during the past financial, at least 2 to 3 years, they have not been significant improvements in terms of implementing the recommendations of the AG. These include the setting of targets that are not aligned with performance indicators or strategic objectives. So issues for follow-up during the 7th Parliament is to develop a tracking tool to monitor the implementation of recommendations submitted to the department and entities. In terms of legislation, honourable members, there's just one legislation that is currently in progress. Then in terms of the shaded areas, the challenges that we observed in processing the legislation, the nationwide public consultations are understandably intensive and highly involved. There is always a possibility that plans may not always go as planned. Hence the requirement for a project postmortem meeting. The project postmortem meeting affords role players an opportunity to reflect on how the project went, and it provides an opportunity to determine what may be improved in the future to produce a more efficient process. We are therefore saying, honourable members, that the Parliament should standardise such meetings. The planning meetings, what we observed, they only occur before the public hearings. In this instance, we are insisting that these meetings should be standardised. For instance, the choice of venues and locations where public hearings were held was a major concern for the committee secretariat that at times impacted on the attendance. The committee encountered various yet avoidable logistical challenges, causing one public hearing in Potchefstroom in the province of KwaZulu-Natal to be cancelled due to venue unavailability. In terms of the content-related challenges, honourable members, prior to the introduction of the bill, the committee has already resolved on several. Chair, I'm not going to go through this particular one. We all know what happened. The decision we took in September to initiate the committee bill, we then had to take another decision to rescind the committee bill because the minister had already on the 29th of June 2023, introduced the executive bill. During the public hearings, it became clear that the department did not conduct adequate consultations before referring the bill to Parliament for processing. Also, there was not sufficient information from the department on the summary of the introduced bill, particularly regarding public consultation or stakeholders that have been consulted. Introduction of bills towards the end of the 6th Parliament, more especially when the committee has already tabled its own bill, seems more like a tick-box exercise. We're observing this one, Honourable Chairperson, because during the 5th Parliament, almost similar occurrence occurred, even though the bill was not introduced, but the committee took a decision to withdraw the private member's bill on the basis that the department will indeed refer the bill to Parliament. Unfortunately, that did not happen. The bill was only referred during the 6th Parliament. We are making a recommendation towards the end of this report around this particular issue. During the public hearings, the committee received extremely constructive feedback from the small business owners. However, several of the submissions were not consistent with the provisions of the bill under review. Due to the technical nature of the bill, even the public education unit struggled at times to effectively describe its contents and objectives. This had unintended repercussions of delaying the proceedings and at times forced the presiding officer, stroke the chairperson, to conduct sessions and provide clarifications that ought to have been provided during the education and awareness campaigns. Then issues for follow-up. During the 7th administration, honourable members, in future, the Speaker of Parliament must refuse or decline tabling of executive bills comparable to those already before Parliament, whether they are in the form of private members' bills or committee bills. The department consultative process in shaping the bill needs to be understood by the committee. A schedule detailing the public consultation process including the business case or any other material evidence in the possession of the department, should be shared with the committee in order to enable it to respond sufficiently to any questions that may be posed to it during the public hearing engagements. During the process of conducting public education and awareness on the bill, the parliamentary public participation unit should be accompanied by either a parliamentary researcher, content advisor, or committee secretary in order to assist with content-related matters during their training sessions. The process of crafting a new bill or amending the existing legislation is highly technical. This is what we have observed above, honorable members. Parliament must make it procedural for the committee secretariat to lead the process of identifying suitable venues for the hearings. The range of individuals and small business owners who attended public hearings was not sufficiently diverse, and not enough business chambers took part in the public hearing. This as far as the legislation processing is concerned, honorable members. Then I come to number six, which is oversight trips undertaken. Like I said earlier, there is only one oversight trip that was undertaken during this term to Northwest. Then there was one fact-finding mission to the provinces of KwaZulu-Natal and Gauteng that took place in August 2021. Then I'll jump straight, honorable members, to the gray shaded areas as well to highlight some of the technical operational challenges that we experience in as far as the two visits are concerned. One, since during the fifth parliament, the committee secretariat has had to wrestle with avoidable travel and logistical challenges, which have had significant budgetary consequences for parliament. The committee secretariat has regularly ensured that it fully conforms with parliament's travel policy, including the timely drafting of political applications. However, permission from the Office of the House Chairperson and the Chief Whip of the majority party sometimes cause delays in the processing of the applications. There is also a significant bureaucracy in processing the applications, predominantly applications for funding. From the unit manager, it goes to section manager, to division manager, and if the amount exceeds 500,000, it must go to the chief financial officer, legal services, and ultimately the secretary to parliament. In many cases, this bureaucracy has resulted in the committee, as in the case of Northwest oversight, missing quoted flights and accommodation. And the secretariat, in consultation with the travel agency, receiving either expensive flights and accommodation or accommodation of poor quality and standard. In Northwest, some members of the committee had to travel to and from Rustenburg and Mafikeng because we could not find accommodation in Mafikeng. We were there for traveling to and from after the oversight visits. This causes fatigue and exhaustion due to the long drive. In some cases, oversight schedules are pre-planned. However, one discovers that there are last-minute adjustments to the parliamentary program right in the thick of the oversight schedule, such as the call for the chairperson meeting in Gauteng, while the parliamentary program has already scheduled oversight visits. Then in terms of the content-related challenges, honorable members, during oversight visits, information on project profiles that are submitted to the committee by the CIFA was often found to be contradictory to the actual projects and was the opposite of the reality on the ground, hence the importance of oversight visits. The department and CIFA often could not provide full accounts of the monies that were allocated to projects at the time of visits. In most cases, CIFA could not give full account of project activities on site, and detailed information had to be sent to Parliament in writing after the visit, which sometimes delayed the finalization of oversight reports and follow-up on recommendations through resolutions. There was no effective monitoring and evaluation by the Department of the utilization and management of conditional grants that they transfer to the agencies on an annual basis for project implementation. The department will generally visit the project for the first time during the committee visit. The failure of both the department and agencies to respond to oversight recommendation is a recurring issue that will most likely necessitate Parliament taking a hard stance on the binding nature of the recommendations. This is what I've indicated, honourable members, above, that there is a problem with the binding nature of the committee recommendation. If the department or entities decide that we are not going to respond, we can only pursue or beg them to do that, you know. Whereas with the recommendations of the public protector, for instance, such recommendations are binding. This is one issue perhaps that the 7th Parliament should look into. The 7th Parliament, not 6th, 7th Parliament should consider following up on the following concerns that arose. First, the Parliament's application process needs to be overhauled. It stands to reason that the more people that have to sign off on something, the longer it will take. However, there is an opportunity for the Parliament executive to considerably simplify and streamline application processes through automation and other interventions. It cannot be correct that each time an oversight visit is planned, such problems creep up, as if it was not known that during a particular period in the calendar of Parliament, there are scheduled oversight visits. Secondly, accommodation provided by travel agency.
Mr. Gumede,
I'm listening, Chair. Am I audible, honourable members, or is my network this side?
We are audible, Mr. Gumede.
Okay, maybe the chairperson is struggling then.
Yeah.
It's fine. Let me carry on. Second, accommodation provided by travel agents is not always up to par. Honorable Chair, you were saying something.
No, sorry. My apologies. I got in the temporarily cut, but please proceed. I'm back.
Okay. So we're saying the second one, accommodation provided by travel agents is not always up to par, with members complaining about the arrangements, stroke standards. Agents book an amount for dinner, but many hotels require that we use the government rate or government package, which only allows for a limited supper in some instances. Members are also not permitted to dine in room in some hotels. This special rate package is significantly less than what we have approval for in terms of dinner. Third, the committee should conduct more frequent oversight missions to districts and provinces. The committee's ongoing and continuous oversights have proved effective and helpful in preventing further bogging of resources meant for small enterprises. Field monitoring visits enables the committee to fulfill its essential stewardship function while also providing technical assistance to the department in identifying, avoiding, and mitigating risks. Last one, the department must develop a set of criteria known as oversight triggers to help identify when a project requires more regular monitoring. The department's agencies must be positioned as the first level of surveillance. Through their frequent monitoring and oversight operations, they should promptly bring to the DSPD's attention any actions, events, or trends that have a good or negative impact on the project. The necessary information should be brought to the DSPD's notice through the most appropriate communication mechanism, taking into account the ramifications of the incident or trend. This is the recommendation, honourable members, that we have consistently been making to the department to say CEDA, due to its locality in various district municipalities, should be utilised as the first layer of surveillance, you know, to look into the projects of the department. Then, Chair, there is just one a study tour that was undertaken by the committee to Germany. There are no issues that we picked up. International agreements, there was none referred during this particular period. We did not do any statutory appointment. We did not do any intervention. Then in terms of the petition, there is one that was referred by the Speaker of Parliament to the committee from employees of Sundan, Mzansi Broadband, ACC Telecoms, Follow Electrical and others. Honourable members, the petition was considered. It was adopted on the 9th of November 2022. Then it was ATC'd. Then in terms of the obligations conferred on the committee by legislation, there is one that you could pick up, which is the Money Bills, Amendments, Procedures and Related Matters Act. This is in as far as the processing of the annual reports of the department and entities. Then thereafter, our requirement to produce what we call in Parliament the Budgetary Review and Recommendations Report, the BRRR. In as far as the BRRR is concerned, Honourable Chairperson, we are saying the department should expedite the recruitment of staff to fill vacant posts as practically as possible. The SMME and cooperatives funding policy must be finalized and operationalized. This is for, apologies, honorable members. I'm using the cell phone to connect as well. And let me just put it on silent quickly. Then we are saying to arrest further decline in audit findings, the department must particularly pay attention to its agencies, CEDA. Safer Board must amend policy guidelines to include a condition for MFIs and RFIs to be licensed by both the National Credit Regulator and Financial Sector Conduct Authority as financial services providers. We are saying CIFA must keep a closer eye on MFIs and RFIs to ensure that they are charging the rate of interest as prescribed in the National Credit Act. The department must improve support to cooperatives, enterprises through improving cooperative sector development program or any other program that the department might consider during the seventh administration. The department must improve support to cooperatives, enterprises. Oh, I'm repeating this one. The minister must finalize the appointment of the advisory board within the financial year that ends on 31 March 2024. This is the recommendation, honorable members, that we did towards the end of last year during the BRRR report. The minister to apprise the committee concerning the energy relief initiative announced, she announced in January 2023, the department to resume the process of lifestyle audits for staff and the conclusion of the business amendment bill. Then summary of outstanding issues, honorable members, it's what we have actually indicated in the past, one of which is the finalization of the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill. Hopefully this will be done before the end of the term. The finalization of the Business Amendment Bill, the finalization and implementation of the SMME and funding policy, the vacancy rate, which I believe has improved with the appointment of the DDGs recently. The committee has on numerous occasions directed that in all quarterly and annual reports, the department and entities must disaggregate the type of enterprises supported or distinguish between cooperatives, informal traders, spaza shop owners, and so forth. We have observed throughout the term, honorable members, that department has a tendency to aggregate the support that it's providing to these different entities. So we want to know, for instance, how many cooperatives were funded. Elsewhere, we are also making an observation that there was a period, for instance, a financial year where CIFA funded zero cooperatives. We are making an observation and recommendation towards the end of this report around the particular issue. Cooperatives have not received appropriate assistance during the current MTSF period under review. The appointment of the advisory board has been a standing item in the recommendation of the committee that is yet to be addressed. We are coming to the end of the term, honourable members. We still do not have the small business advisory board appointed by the minister. In terms of FIFA, throughout the tenure, the committee has urged FIFA to restructure its relationship with MFIs and RFIs. The committee's recent visit to Northwest Province raised significant concerns that require prompt action from both the department and the committee, including recovery of funds embezzled by one RFI. Then in terms of SIDA, honorable members, there are no substantive or recurring issues that could be identified besides the audit findings, which again came towards the end of the term. There might be something wrong with your mask. Then on number 14, honorable members, other matters referred to the speaker by chairperson. It's only that we are responding to the Zondo Commission recommendations. And in terms of our response, we have said the committee has cited the National Small Enterprise Amendment Bill as it contains provisions that somehow addresses some of the recommendations in the report. I'm not going to go through this one, honorable members, except to say that the report of the Zondo include observations and recommendations relating to Parliament's capacity to meet its constitutional obligation in respect of performing oversight over the executive and holding the executive to account. So I will quickly jump now to recommendations, honorable members. Then what I will do, I will just go through one by one. The first one, the recommendation that this committee is making to the 7th Parliament, that it should consider to develop a system for the facilitation, monitoring, and tracking of executive responses to the committee recommendations and resolutions. It should also guarantee that the recommendations have specified timeframes for the executive to respond. Second recommendation, it's the instability in the senior management services level of the department during the 6th Parliament's term affected the department's service delivery and subsequently the effectiveness of the committee's oversight over the department. Since 2014, the department could not keep an accounting officer stroke director general for more than 24 months and relied on different acting personnel for those periods that it did not have an accounting officer. In addition, throughout the financial years, there were always vacancies at the DDG level and other SMS level, which impacted decision making. The committee observed throughout the term that the majority of underspending on financial indicators was due to employee compensation, as well as goods and services owing to vacant posts. All four of the department's programs underutilized their funding allocation, mostly as a result of unfilled funded posts. The 7th Parliament should consistently monitor such challenges and get briefings on vacancies, particularly at SMS level, while ensuring that the department fills critical and SMS level vacancies with qualified and competent people to reduce reliance on consultants. The next one, the committee applauds the department for paying 100% of its invoices within 30 days in line with the PFMA. This is one indicator where the department excelled throughout the term under review. However, as a custodian of small enterprises, the committee remarked that the department must ensure that all other state organs comply with this directive. The committee is urging the 7th Parliament to ensure that it establishes an indicator for implementation in collaboration with National Treasury to track delinquent invoices. Where state organs are failing to pay uncontested invoices within 30 days, FIFA must be on standby to pick up the tab through, among others, session arrangements. The 7th Parliament should ascertain that this indicator is included in the upcoming MTSF strategy plan and APPs of various state departments. The department has also been slow in the development, implementation, and review of existing policies. Other notable areas of progress, but remains incomplete, are SMME and funding policy, which was gazetted for public comments in April 2023. So is the National Integrated Small Enterprise Development Strategy Framework, where the department embarked on consultation sessions with key role players in the small enterprise ecosystem to solicit inputs to the finalization of the framework. The 7th Parliament should ensure that SMME and cooperative funding policy and others are expedited and operationalized. The committee is concerned that the simmering conflict between local and foreign-owned businesses calls for a clear-cut policy. To date, there have been 2 ad hoc committees of Parliament, both of which have identified a lax regulatory environment. Both ad hoc committees that looked into xenophobic attacks in 2008 and 2015 came to the conclusion that small business regulation in the nation, such as the granting of trading permits and business licenses to foreigners, was a significant source of conflict and needed to be addressed through policy or legislative interventions. It is a common practice around the world to not grant permits and licenses to immigrants in fields that should be reserved for South Africans. The committee observed that there is no legislation or policy to safeguard or reinforce actions meant to provide effective protection to township and rural enterprises. While comparable regulatory instruments exist in other countries. Furthermore, in its engagements with the sector, the committee found that the spaza shop owners and informal traders are the most regulated and least protected, while most trade illegally due to a lack of licensing. The 7th Parliament should push the department to table the Business Amendment Bill without any further delay, partly to address this particular concern. Then the next one, cooperative development and support, remains a constant area of concern for the committee during the 6th term. For instance, the committee noted with great concern that not even a single cooperative benefited from CIFA during 1 April 2021 to 31 March 2022. We are just using this, honorable member, as an example. The situation could be worse. In response, the department had contended that CIFA balance sheet is limited and cannot afford to offer 100% grants to SMEs and cooperatives. It had further identified the source of challenges being that the blended finance system that is used to fund cooperatives makes it difficult for many cooperatives to qualify and have access to the funds available due to the fact that through blended finance, cooperatives have to have a positive or healthy credit score. Yet it failed to devise mechanism or mitigating strategy to deal with this problem. The committee strongly urges the 7th Parliament to make sure that strategic plans of the department and entities or entity consist of a clear-cut programs aimed at assisting cooperatives. It should closely monitor quarterly and annual reports to ensure that cooperatives receive necessary support from the department and agencies. The 7th Parliament should consider and support the department's endeavor to expand strategic alliances with the corporate sector or private sector and vigorously pursue outside funding alternatives, particularly for startups, by whenever possible, providing an enabling policy environment. With the SME credit gaps, cession of contracts and income, or cession of income in order to unlock the balance sheets of commercial banks. The department and CIFA are unable to support millions of small enterprises. The upcoming committee should keep an eye on the department and agency quarterly reports to ensure that this recommendation is being followed through. The 6th Parliament Committee flagged red tape. It's one of the thematic areas, honorable members, that we discussed at the beginning of the term. We flagged red tape as an area of attention, as it believed that it was one of the biggest constraints on economic opportunity, business investment, and job creation. At the start of its term, the committee has sought to dissect and analyze common bottlenecks bedeviling small enterprise sector from realizing full potential. The committee had then re-examined all previous government initiatives aimed at eliminating red tape. We looked at the regulatory impact assessment. We looked at the socio-economic impact assessment system. We looked at the guidelines for reducing municipal red tape and national red tape reduction, which the department often calls RTRs. We concluded that none of these interventions were yielding any positive spin-offs, considering the rate at which small enterprises were disappearing. In that regard, the committee had applauded the appointment of Mr. Sipongosi, right in the middle of the MTSF period, who is a seasoned business expert to assist the government eliminate red tape that stifles small business growth. However, that excitement was short-lived. Not much headway has been recorded in this regard. The seventh parliament needs to adopt a ruthless approach to eliminating red tape. It is suggested that the establishment of a parliamentary ad hoc committee should be strongly considered in order to put together a tangible plans for implementation by the government-wide departments and agencies to deal with the red tape. According to the data from Statistics South Africa, over 1,300 businesses in South Africa shut their doors in 2023. There may be other underlying reasons for this, but the impact of load shedding on South African enterprises cannot be understated. Small and medium-sized businesses, as well as huge multinationals, have all been affected. On 17 January 2023, the department announced that it was immediately working on the energy relief package for the small, medium, informal, and micro sector in partnership with its agencies and various stakeholders within and outside government. The contents of the package, as well as the requirements and avenues for applying for relief, were to be revealed almost immediately. Not much progress has been made in this regard. The seventh parliament must pace with the implementation of this relief package in an effort to arrest a complete decimation of the small enterprise sector. The lifestyle audits are an essential management technique for preventing, detecting fraud and corruption in public services. They also contribute to ensuring that the lives of state employees are commensurate with their remuneration. In April 2021, the government established and approved mandate guidelines for all audits of public officials in national and provincial departments, as well as state-owned enterprises. The seventh parliament should enforce implementation of this policy by the department. The next one, continuous monitoring that the department and entities implement the audit improvement plans, have functioning internal audit committees in place, as well as implement consequence management as advised by the Office of the AG and recommended by this committee in all its BRRRs. This is one of the recommendations we are making to the seventh parliament, honorable members, to make sure that the department continue to monitor the implementation of these recommendations by the AG. Then the next one, the committee should also conduct regular oversight visits. The report into investigation on the Northbreath visit and the recommendations should be followed up. And the seventh parliament committee is urged to conduct a focused oversight on the government and institutional stability of agencies in terms of a full constitution of the board, separation of powers between the board and staff of the entities, or the entity, following up on the findings of the AG and ensure that it is fully and appropriately staffed to enable it to execute its legislated mandate. Towards the end of the sixth parliament, there was a noticeable decline in audit findings, particularly for CIFA, to arrest further decline in audit findings of the agencies. The seventh parliament must watch closely the extent to which the agencies implement Auditor General's recommendations. The accounting authorities, stroke board of directors of the agencies must be held accountable for improving controls, for proper record keeping, and ensuring that complete, relevant, and accurate information is accessible and available to support performance data. Through the tracking tool, the 7th Parliament should make certain that the management responds to the AG's requests with the requisite agency in addressing identified risks and improving internal controls, which will improve the audit outcomes for both the department and entities. Following the oversight visit to the Northwest Province, the committee emphasized the importance of the CIFA board to consider amendments to the policy guidelines to include a condition for MFIs and RFIs to be licensed by both the NCR and FSCA as authorized FSPs. The committee found that the NCR licensing process is defecting in that it focuses solely on the entity or corporation as a legal person, whereas the FSCA approach, it also includes both the firm and the individual behind the company, meaning the director of a company. The majority of NCR licensed companies are led by directors who do not meet the criterion of a fit and proper. The 7th Parliament must see to it that this recommendation is implemented without delay. At the time of concluding the legacy report, honorable members, the committee learned from the AG report that the portfolio had achieved only 7% of its targets. This was, honorable members, when we considered the annual reports towards the end of last year. This figure may have changed. We are waiting for further guidance from the department in terms of any changes that are there, implying 33% non-achievement of MTSF targets. The committee should monitor and ensure that the remaining targets are incorporated for accomplishment in the next MTSF period. Then in terms of the committee strategic plan, honorable members have indicated that we only looked here at the 4 thematic areas which we incorporated in the strategic plan of the committee. It will then be attached once we conclude the final report, and also the master attendance list. I'm relying on Mr. Gunene and Mr. Dodo to provide that list for incorporation in the legacy report. The master attendance list will, for instance, indicate the number of members who were with us at the beginning of the term and who left us in the middle of the term. Honorable members, these are just strategic objectives of the committee. It's an annexure to the report, which really marks the end of my presentation in as far as this legacy report is concerned. Then from now on, I will then be taking input from members wherein we attempt to beef it up and maybe to clarify some of the issues that are not clearly articulated in the report. Let me hand back to you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Kumeli, for a very detailed, very comprehensive report. I went back to my records to look at the 5th administration legacy report and also to compare now. But members, here we have it. It's a lot for us to engage with. I'm not sure if we want to just have a first round of initial impressions, overall impressions, or do we want to go a process where we give written submissions? But members, let me check with you and invite inputs. Can I get a show of hand? Okay, what I'll do is I want to see all the hands because I don't want to come back again. So if your hand is not up, I'm not going to give you another chance. So I recognize Honorable Kruger, Honorable de Villiers. Let me see these other hands.
Honorable Kruger, Honorable de Villiers, Honorable Flamelang.
Yeah, in that order. Okay, please proceed, Honorable Kruger.
Yes, thank you, Chair. And again, thank you to our content advisor, Mr. Kumedi, for a job, excellent job done. I mean, it's a very thorough report, and I think we all agree about his observations. However, Chair, there's just two items that I want to highlight. The one is the immigrants, and I think we all agree about the immigrant situation in South Africa, but I think we must add illegal immigrants, because some of our immigrants are legal, and you know, we can't you know, allow them not to run a business. So I think we must just add the word illegal immigrants. That's my first point. The second point, Chair, and we all complain right through the 5 years about it, is the minister's absence. The minister's absence in this meetings. So I think we must just mention.
Honorable Kruger?
Yes.
Are you still?
Can you hear me, Chair? Can everybody hear me, Chair?
I can hear you.
Yes, yes, you are audible. I think Honorable Jacobs is struggling somehow.
So I don't know if everybody pick up my last point about the minister absence in this committee. Most of these problems could have been avoided if the minister was, you know, present in most of our meetings. It was, and I think all the parties was in agreement that the minister's absence to this meeting was unacceptable. Thank you, Chair.
My apologies, I got cut, but I got the gist of the argument. Honourable de Villiers?
Yes, thank you, Chairperson. Let me also be brief. Can you, am I audible? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can indeed. Continue, Honourable de Villiers.
Thank you, Chair. So firstly, I would like to congratulate. It is, I think, a very, very thorough report. It's very detailed, and I also support that we get given some time to just make written submissions so that we can just go through it a little bit more technically. I also agree with my colleagues' sentiments. I think that we were all expecting the minister to be more active and participating in our committee meetings more, and one would expect that that she has a better attendance. And then I would just from my side like to add that you know, at the end of the day, we did get our legislation through, which is one of the important functions of this committee. But I do think that for the seventh parliament, it is really important that we do not have an executive bill that competes with a committee bill, that there is better communication between our minister and legislation which she is developing and our legislation which we are proud of and which we developed. You know, it comes down to wasted energy and time that we were developing a committee bill which she then made into an executive bill. And there was almost competition to get the same bill out. Nonetheless, we got it out, and I think we were all in agreement that that was a good outcome. And then I would just like to say that I look forward to receiving just communication about when we can actually give our written submissions, that we can take this very thorough report and go through it properly. And that's my only initial comments for now. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Tulelwa.
Is it me, Chair?
Thank you.
Oh. You can go in, Honorable Matulelwa. I'll come after. It's fine.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Mine is to say that we thank you for the report. It's thorough, and we wish that if our entities are taking notes, they can learn from this, because they are always sugarcoating and giving us reports that are not a true reflection of what is happening. This is what we say a report. That's why we are not even acknowledging some of the reports, because their report really is just a to bring report it forward. So what I can say, Chairperson, we are happy to have this kind of a report, and also I'm agreeing with honorable members, that we must just add those smaller nyana things that are left out, more especially the issue of the bill, and also I think as a portfolio committee, really, Mr. Kruger is right. We cannot allow this absence of the minister. So I believe it should appear in the report that the absence of the minister in the portfolio committee, we note it, and then we don't agree with it as a portfolio committee. We don't agree with it, regardless of what many things are, because we did even give some of the recommendations that if the day is not suitable for the minister, us, we don't have a problem to change to other days. As we are elected by the people, we are even working over the weekends if it may suit the minister, or it may answer to the call that the minister should be permanently present in the portfolio committee. Thank you so much, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Matulelwa. What? Honorable Tlamela.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also follow on what my colleagues, I hope I'm audible because it's load shading now. Oh, thanks. Let me also join my colleagues in appreciating the work that has been done. Indeed, it is a true reflection of what happened since we're in office 20 May to date. And all the activities are following one another in sequence. We must appreciate, and there is a true reflection of issues, especially even when you look at the programs, four programs of the department, they have attached what were the issues, the observation and the recommendation, Chairperson. We must applaud them for the good work that have been done, Chair. The only thing that I want to speak to is the issue that has been raised by my colleagues on the issue of the absence of the minister in the meetings. I think when we put the report, because we must put a true reflection, we must also indicate, because I hope in each and every meeting there was an indication where the minister was when we had our own portfolio committee meeting. And I agree with Honorable Matulela that we once proposed that maybe we can schedule another day. But we must not just leave it as if the minister was not part of the meeting and he was somewhere doing something else, so that the seventh administration must plan properly. But they must not experience that problem that we have experienced as far as the issue of the minister is concerned. But Chairperson, I also want to support the issue of the illegal immigrants. I wanted to speak too. And lastly, I agree with Honorable De Villiers to say that because we still have to do the final draft, members can take this report. I think it will be just few things, and revisit it again maybe over the weekend so that we can make a...
Chair, we can't hear Ms. Flomelang.
She did indicate there was load shedding in her area. Honorable Flomelang, can you come in again? We got the gist of your argument, but I want you to conclude, if possible. Oh, there she's gone. Any other members before I try to summarize and look at a process? Okay. So members, I think Mr. Gumede, with those inputs of the members, I think the one issue that we need to do is we need to just agree on the process for a written submission. So is it possible, members, is it doable that we hopefully want to sign off on this report by Wednesday next week? So we also want to give Mr. Gumede time. Can we say that written submissions be in through the secretary of the committee by Friday, close of business? Is that acceptable to all the members? I'm making a recommendation. Thank you, Kruger. I get a thumbs up from you, so I assume that's in order. Okay, so Members, I think we will factor in those. Let me also from the chairs also give you some feedback. I also want to share with members the very comprehensive nature of the report. I will also make time to give written submissions. I think the one issue that I want us maybe just to add more is you did mention cooperatives, but I think we need to say a bit more because cooperative movement is happening and there's a lot of development despite the department's support. So I think there was a clause where you raised the issue about the department hasn't funded cooperatives in within a whole year. But I think what's important is that the mixed economy is an important approach, a very practical approach. And given our visit to Germany and given the great initiatives that we have in across our country, I think it's important that we just say a bit more on the cooperatives. I think the one area that we really didn't cover in great detail in the portfolio committee and also must come through quite strongly is women's entrepreneurial spaces. There has been a dedicated campaign, but I think women represent more than 52% of our population. So I'd like to see if we can't have a special maybe paragraph or so on women's entrepreneurship, the state of it, and also come up with recommendations around that. Incubators, innovation, fintech, those are issues that is happening in the entrepreneurial ecosystem. And I think maybe we should just mention some of those things around the incubators. I've been at the exhibitions last week and I've seen Alan Gray's foundation, the South African Breweries Foundation. There's great private sector entrepreneurial support and initiatives happening there. And I think one thing that we as this portfolio committee didn't do was to genuinely bring the private and public partnership together and celebrate best practice, because there is indeed best practice. I've seen without wanting to profile one or two people, but I've seen the Alan Gray pitching process where you get youngsters from university and they're having a pitching competition where you come up with your ideas and there's money and access to that. And maybe the department must also, instead of doing this long bureaucratic funding process, we have a public process where because we learn from each other, where you have a window where people can come in, pitch their ideas, get a support from the small business ecosystem and getting them going to move. Because then there's greater transparency in the process, there's greater transparency in the application and the successful rate. And then we can celebrate our meritocracy, things that are really working well in our industry. I think what we need to do is also, given that more than 13,000 businesses have closed their business. And I think it's not only load shedding, it's also the economic recession, the slow economic growth coming out of COVID, and just the perfect storm. I think we hope that is behind us now, and we will see the sun and the rays coming out, and hopefully we will be able to grow the ecosystem. So I think I'm just making an additional comment to that. I also support the idea of greater cooperative governance in the small business ecosystem across national departments. So I like the idea of getting national treasury and all the national departments to pay within the 30 days and having a tracking tool on that, but also ensure that we coordinate the initiatives of small business development. So, for example, agriculture has a small agricultural voucher system. In other departments, there's some stuff on entrepreneurial, but we don't coordinate it. There's no level of coordination. So I think we might just say a bit more between national departments, the 40-odd departments, how we can ensure greater coordination and avoid duplication and fragmentation and wastage across that. But I think the other role is also the role of provinces. Some provinces have really good best practice, and some provinces can learn from each other, like what is happening in KZN and Gauteng around the township economy is really good. What is happening in here in the province, also in the Western Cape, Westgrow, and the initiatives around how they take businesses to the next level is also something that we must be able to celebrate. And I think, put aside the politics, I think we need to celebrate where things are really working well, and also look at how we bring the province's entrepreneurial ecosystem and also the agencies, economic agencies, to bring to bear on small business. And then lastly, we have in each municipality a local economic development manager or LED manager. Each municipality has that. And they're meant to look at creating opportunities for private sector and investment friendly and red tape reduction in municipalities, both in the local and the district space. And I don't see a correlation, because if we have a proper system, then each municipality must have a small business, a CIFA or the new entity office, and they must be able to say, okay, in the city of Cape Town, we've been able to help X amount of people with our own resources and with national government. We also need to say something about simplifying license, municipal license application, because in some instances, the metros are still chasing our informal traders away from walking. I know the situation sometimes in Johannesburg, Etiquette, we picked up, and also here in Cape Town, some people were chased away from Gatesville and the parade. So I think also about simplifying the license, we need to say something more about that. I think we did speak to the access to markets and access to finance, but I think if we can just mention that. I will pause there, but those are some of my additions to be made. I think what we need to do is allow the team led by Mr. Gumede to factor the issues that we raised now, and then written submissions deadline by Friday, and hopefully we will then have a good draft for us to engage with again next week and hopefully sign off. Members, I hope you're comfortable with that summary. Mr. Gumede, just last words.
You've covered me, Chairperson, because I was going to recommend the same, to say perhaps if you could look into close of business by Friday or early Saturday, so that maybe over the weekend I work on this. By Sunday afternoon, I circulated to the members just to give you adequate time to go through it again, maybe on Monday and Tuesday in preparation for the adoption on Wednesday. So I'm comfortable with the proposed due date being Friday. I should be able to circulate the amended version by Sunday afternoon or Monday morning. That's my undertaking, Chairperson. That's it from me. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mr. Gumede and team. We in advance appreciate the work. It's very comprehensive, and so we're just putting on the last bells and whistle, but I think a job well done thus far. And please, members, make opportunity with the provide written submission so that we put our voice in this report and we own it collectively. All right, let's move to the last item. I think it's just adopting minutes. Mr. Kunene, I'm going to invite you to just take us through.
Thank you, Chairperson. These are the main, we've got the two set of minutes, because week before last week couldn't consider the minutes of the 28th February, where we were getting briefings on the quarter two and quarter three performance reports of the department, CIFA and CEDA. So those members were in attendance, and then we had the officials from the department and from the entities that were in attendance, and we also have the officials from Parliament were in attendance, and then the meeting was opened by the chairperson, and then he outlined the objective of the meeting as of getting the briefings on the performance, of the quarterly performance of quarter 2 and 3 of the department and SIFA and SIDA. And then there was an apology for Mr. Kruger, the minister and the deputy minister. And then those apologies were noted. And then this was the briefing of SIDA. We started with SIDA. The briefing of the department, which it indicated that it had 9 indicators, and then they achieved 6, and 3 were not achieved under administration with their 4 programs, sector and market development. Then they achieved 3, and then they underachieved 2, development finance, 7, a target, achieved 5, and 2 were not. Enterprise development, 4 were achieved, and then 1. Then the total was that it performed at 69%, and then 31% was not achieved. That is in quarter 2, and then according to classification, it was actual that we used it, 44 million, which is 86.1%. Goods and services, 73.3%. Transfer and subsidies, it was a day over by 742.973. And then in capital assets, it was 78.8. And then the variance of 282.3. And then the actuals were that quarter 2 projection was at 838.741. And then the expenditure was 819.301, and then the variance was 19,440. Then on their quarter 3 of the department in administration, they performed at 75%. Sector development was at 50%. Development finance, it was at 86%. Enterprise development was at 71.4%, and in total for quarter 3 it was 73%, and with the underachievement of 27%. And then according to the economic classification, it was 47.730, that they overperformed by 1.5%. Goods and services, 533 million. Transfer and subsidies, it was at 56.5%. And then capital assets, it was at 2.578. Then it was the quarter 2 of SIFA, which then stated that their value for approval to assess MNEs and cooperatives, the quarter 2 was at 4.3 billion, and the key indicators as follows: it SMMEs and cooperative 2 to 6 million, representing only 34% against the target of 657 million. The value of disbursement to SMME and cooperatives, it was 418 million, which represented 66% against the target of 638. Number of jobs facilitated was 9,392, which is representing 36% out of the target of 25,995. Value of disbursement to township, it was at 45%. Value of disbursement to rural enterprises, 47%. Value of disbursement to black-owned enterprises, 71%. Value of disbursement to women-owned enterprises, 60%. Disbursement value to youth-owned enterprises, 24%. Value disbursement to enterprise owned by entrepreneurs with disability, was at 18%. Cost to income ratio, it was at 74%. Accumulated impairment provision, it was at 50%. Collection rate, it was at 49.8% against the target of 85%. Then on the quarter three, value approval to SMME, it was at 147%, was over achieved. Value dispensed to SMME and cooperatives, it was at 81% with an amount of 495,288 million. Number of jobs facilitated, it was at 144%, which was the 46,447 against the target of 34. Then it was overachievement. Value of disbursement to township enterprises was at 36%. Value of disbursement to rural enterprises, it was at 95% of the total amount of 230,399 million. Value of disbursement to black-owned enterprises was 452,954 million, which was representing 105%. It was an overachievement against the target of 432. Value of disbursement to women-owned enterprises, it was at 130%, which was 287,044 million, while the target was 220,367. Value of disbursement to youth-owned enterprises was at 77%, with an amount of 99,655 million. Cost to income ratio was at 58% against the target of 74%. Accumulated impairment provision, it was at 58% against the target of 50. And the collection rate, it was at 70.3% against the target of 75%. Then quarter two of CEDA, it was a total of 16 indicators, 15 were achieved with 110% more, and then representing 94% with the indicator, with one underperformed indicator at 57%. CEDA was reporting on four programs, that enterprise development program, CEDA technology program, impact and sustainability program, and then on administration. So service access points, CEDA has got indicated that has got 53 branches, 52 access points, 57 co-location points, and 110 incubation centers. And then group supported people with disabilities enterprises, it was only supported 383 against the quarterly target of 720. Female enterprises was 6,035 against the target of 4113. That was overachievement. Youth enterprises, it was 4,456 against quarterly target of 3085. That is an overachievement. Okay, enterprises, categories supported in quarter two, cooperatives supported, there were 103, representing 3%, and SMME, there were 2,979, representing 97% of the total of 3082. Okay, their finances, as it is stated, that they expanded the budget 93.44 for quarter two, and then expenditure was 94.43 with the variance of 992. Project programs and administration was the target of 86.98, and then it was 92.3.
Mr. Kunene, I see, I'm not sure if that's any intervention from Honorable Kruger, but okay. Let me just pause quickly and then invite him, Honorable Kruger. want to come in?
Yes, thank you, Chair, and my apologies for intervening. Chair, I don't know, I might be out of order, but we made a decision that we won't go through reports again in our minutes, because it seems like we sit now in the same meeting as when CIDA and CIFA gave their report. The decision that we as a committee made in the past was that we will read the minutes before and then we will go through the minutes page by page. And I don't know if that order is still standing. It could be changed because we changed chairpersons. But
thank you for that. Thank you. Thank you, Honorable Kruger. I had to intervene earlier. Mr. Kunene, I think what we want is not a verbatim read of the report, but just highlight the key things. Because like Honorable Kruger said, we did go through this, and I see it's quite a lengthy report. So maybe we should just skim through it and ask members, because we assume that members did read it, and then we just ask members if this is an accurate reflection. So try to just summarize, Mr. Kunene.
Thank you, Chair. It's page 10. That is the we are under the presentation of CIDA at the quarter 3 report. Then go to page 4. These are the deliberations that took place. And then that was a deliberation which was reflecting the quad raised by the committee and the responses that were given by CIFA, CIDA, and the department. And then on the next page, these were the resolutions then made by the committee. Then on number 6, these were the consideration of committee minutes of 5 October. 10 October, 11 October, 18 October, 28 November, 29 November, 30 November, and 1 December, and the 5th December, and the minutes of the 27th February. I think members will remember that those ones from November, that was the daily. It was when we were busy finalizing the legislation. And then we had the closing remarks from Chairperson and the meeting agenda at 13:45. Chairperson, these are the minutes of the committee of the date.
Thank you so much, Mr. Kunene. Let's get a mover and a seconder for the set of minutes of the 28th of February. Honorable Muller.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to move for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you so much. Can I get a seconder? Members, are we still here? Members, can I get a seconder for the set of minutes as a true reflection of what transpired?
I'll second, Chair. It's Honorable de Villiers.
Thank you so much, Honorable de Villiers. Okay. Next set.
Thank you. These are the minutes of the committee of Wednesday, 6 March, where we got briefing from Hemp for Life, briefing from House of Hemp, and then briefing from the South African Health Product Regulatory Authority, SAPRA. And then we were supposed to consider the minutes. These are the members who were in attendance. And then these are the representative from the department and the invitees. And then these are the officials from the parliament. Opening was done by Chairperson and the briefing was done by Mr. Sussman representing Hemp for Life. And then this was the briefing by House of Hemp, which was got the briefing from Dr. Thandeka Kunene, who is the Chief Executive Officer. And then we had a briefing from the South African Health Products regulatory, which the presentation was made by Mr. Dion Hovan, who is the senior manager for Inspectorate and Law Enforcement in South Africa. These are the deliberations that were raised in the committee, which then commented on how should they work together, the House of Hemp, together with the Hemp for Life. So these are the resolutions on page 4 that were taken, that they were encouraged to work together. And then also there was a resolution that the committee should segment all that has been raised to the research unit and then be considered for later deliberations. Page 5 minutes were not considered, but due to time constraints. And then we had a closing remarks from the chairperson. And then the meeting was adjourned at 12:55. Chairperson, these are the minutes of the 6th March 2024 of the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Munene. Members, can I get a mover, please? Honorable Somelang.
Thank you, Chair. My apology earlier on. I was struggling with the network, but I move the adoption of the minutes as a true reflection. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Honorable Muller.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'd like to second for the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much, members. So we've adopted both sets of minutes, 28th and 20th and 6th of March. Is that it, Honorable Mr. Kunene?
Yes, Chairperson.
Thank you. So, colleagues, I think we've come to the end of our meeting. Thank you for your, as usual, your great input and participation. We know there's sitting at 3, so please have a good lunch, and we'll see each other in the house. Thank you for your participation in the meeting stand adjourned. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you, Chair. Bye-bye, everybody.
Don't leave, Chair. Thank you. Thank you, everybody.